Blog Talk Hello. Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
So, Jeff, they had to reshuffle this entire show, and I think we got a better show for it. I was going to talk about Drew McIntyre and how intrigued I am by his character right now, but I got to start with, you know, what it all comes down to ultimately, which is really good matches, and especially when there's a title on the line and they do a good job building up. I thought they did a really nice job telling Tommaso Ciampa's story, building him up for this moment on this show, transitioning from a pay-per-view match to filling in to make up for the fact that neither Damian Priest nor Becky Lynch were cleared for their scheduled matches. And then we got a 23-minute excellent match. Gunther, of course, retained. Not that they didn't, you know, for maybe an average viewer add a grain of doubt to it, with Ciampa scoring some you know, semi-convincing near falls. And then it all made sense why they told this story, because it transitioned so smoothly into, after a post-match beatdown, Johnny Gargano making his return, and Gargano and Ciampa reuniting as DIY to set up a really intriguing, promising tag team feud with Vinci and Kaiser. I just thought this was a really well-booked intra-show program, an audible called. I assume that would have, you know, everything we saw tonight would happen at the pay-per-view, if not tonight. What do you think? Are you with me on this?
Yeah, I really enjoy when the WWE gets kind of forced out of their comfort zone. They get pushed into having to throw shows like this together. I think more times than not, they end up doing really well with them. And I think the recent uptick in high-quality writing that's gone into their programming in general really saved the day with this one, too. When you have so much care, so much thought going into the build of Ciampa-Gunther match, for example, you have it in your holster when things go off the rails with some other programs. And I would dare say they barely missed a beat tonight. It felt like an odd show at times. Like, yeah. do we even know where Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn were?
No.
It seems like a bad time for them to also have the night off. But with them and Finn off and a number of matches scrapped, it was a real treat to get this kind of main event.
I know. Yeah. I mean, COVID's going around. They didn't make a big production like they did Friday with John Cena of travel difficulties. Did they advertise KO and Sami specifically?
I didn't see anything about them, but I just, you know, they're so built into
integral.
The fabric of the show. Yeah.
Absolutely. I was just kind of like, not second guessing, but being like, was it last second or did they know? So it might've just been a week off for them. But it's a weird time to
right.
take a
that
week off. It could have been, you know, one of them was, I don't know, who knows? Well, I'll ask around and see if we can find out, maybe even by the end of the live podcast here. It was a weird show. But like you said, they were out of their comfort zone. They probably had to scramble a bit. Well, certainly they had to scramble a bit with Damian Priest, not sure why he wasn't cleared, but Becky Lynch pretty clear with a gruesome graphic photo of her damaged elbow from No Mercy. So, but I thought this turned out well, and I want to get into other aspects of the show later on in as we go on here, but I want to stay focused on the DIY, the angle at the end of DIY against Vinci and Kaiser. They're telling the story that Gunther has put Ludwig in charge of keeping Kaiser or getting Kaiser kind of back in line. And they had a little bit of a angle earlier in the show or moment in the match earlier in the show where Kaiser wasn't there for it, or Vinci wasn't there for a tag. But overall, all's well that ends well, I guess. And so, I'm excited to see DIY against Vinci and Kaiser. And I think they've done a really nice job setting this feud up. And when Gargano went out at the end, I'm like, oh, so perfect. That's why they even did this match in the first place, is to set up this moment. A really good match. They made the title seem important. And I want to underline this too. Gunther is just so good in ways that I didn't know he was good. I knew how good he was in the ring and how imposing and what a presence he was, but his facial expressions, his body language, he says so much when he's not talking. He's been really good on the mic for a while, but during the contract signing earlier in the show, he was just pitch perfect with the way he responded to Ciampa's intensity and, like this kind of smug, patronizing smile. I'm so impressed with him right now, and he's just checking all the boxes of what I think is a really well-rounded top-tier WWE star, and I think they're in really good shape with him. What are your thoughts?
I felt that he was operating on a main event level, honestly, and it first stood out to me tonight. I think same place it did with you was during that the contract signing with Ciampa. His facials, he wasn't being intimidated at all by Ciampa, who was kind of losing his mind there a little bit. And he was just able to kind of smirk it off and, you know, held his own in a very realistic way. He didn't have those John Cena is saved by LA Knight kind of facials going on. He was, you know, the way you would expect someone in his position to react to someone like Ciampa with that kind of bluster coming at him.
I'm above you. Settle down.
Right.
But not in a way that it made you want to see Ciampa take him to the limit, you know, the way that he acted. It didn't make Ciampa not seem like a big deal. It just made you want to see Gunther as a heel get beat up.
Right. Right. And I don't know if we want to go into their promo at all from during the contract signing, but I really liked what was going on there too. I thought it was funny that Ciampa accused Gunther of being served a 5-course meal since he arrived in WWE. I mean, that's the same guy I watched wrestle in a high school gym in Brooklyn about 6 years ago. It's the same guy who got his start on, NXT UK. He wasn't even in regular NXT. I don't think he wanted to live in the U.S. during that time. But he got his name changed partway through his run. He worked incredibly hard to transform his body, which I assumed had something to do with Vince, maybe initially at least. But
I think it might have had to do with his fiance and a change in diet, but I could be wrong.
Yeah. Okay. Regardless, I think he's really had to grind out, you know, everything to get where he is. And obviously, I'm sure the actual Tommaso Ciampa feels the same way. But it was kind of a funny thing to insert into your promo there. It didn't seem to quite fit who Gunther is or who we know him to be.
You know, in my only counter to that is I think sometimes pro wrestling bookers and wrestlers work too hard to wedge reality into a story when there's a better fictional story to tell. And as long as you tell it within the framework of your narrative structure and it works and it rings true to the mass, the majority who are immersed in that narrative structure of Raw, as opposed to the whole journey Gunther and Walter has been on, it works for me. But I also would say that it was more, what you're saying is completely factually true, but what Raw viewers have seen is a guy who came in and dominated from the beginning. And yeah, you can make the case, what did he do other than beat people up nonstop, Ciampa? You know, that would be your pushback on it. But Ciampa wants to portray and frame Gunther as a highly touted star from overseas who was deemed a future top star. Now, again, you're right. There was skepticism. He didn't necessarily check all the boxes right away in Vince's eyes. What am I going to do with this guy? And there's always that thing of when someone's really over before you get to know them, if you're Vince, then you're like, well, I want to prove all these people are wrong or make him prove himself to me. That said, the story that they've told with Gunther on television matched that well enough for me. Like, to me, I think that's a story fans can believe in. He's got this history that you cited, and he paid his dues. But compared to Ciampa, when you think about, you know, Ciampa worked his ass off in NXT, you know, went on this long journey in the indies, but he hasn't been, if you want to go meta, booked to win from the start like Gunther has. And I think there was a little undercurrent to that, but it works on a non-meta level too. So I this is one of those instances I'd actually enter into evidence as just give fans a story to believe in as opposed to wedging the inconvenient truth in because you feel an obligation to that minority of fans who are going to say, like you did, hey, wait a second, I know a little better. I saw him in a high school gym years ago.
Fair. Fair point.
but Ciampa was so fired up there. Like, I'm not saying like I got chills watching it, but like you could imagine fans at home sitting on their couch going, oh, this guy? And then by the end going, this guy! I want him to be Gunther. Like, he did so – he was so into telling the story, the 5-year-old kid who wanted this title, and this is going to be my night. And then when he said, boy, look at me when I'm talking to you, I mean, that almost came off, like, unscripted. Like, it was just like – he was so worked up, he just saw Gunther not looking at him. And, like, that's what a That's what a man would say to somebody who's feeling disrespected by another man. Like, hey, look at me when I'm talking to you.
And again, right there, Gunther's reaction was perfect, too. Ooh, okay, I'm looking at you. Okay.
I'll look at you, but you're still beneath me.
Yes. Yeah, I did feel bad for Ciampa and that he didn't get to experience the full title day vibe with the air smelling different and those sorts of things, you know, that he would have felt.
Yes.
If things had gone according to plan. But, you know, he got his match, so.
And you know what? This is one of those matches where, I mean, because of Peacock, more people see PLEs than that used to see the old pay-per-views when you had to pay, or WWE Network for that matter. But this is, I mean, I assume it's going to be like a really big audience. I'm curious how the third hour and really the last half hour of viewership holds up compared to normal, because I think they did such a good job with this, and it'll be a telltale sign about how over Gunther is, how over his title reign is, and if that contract signing segment with Ciampa was effective. But a lot of people, I think more people saw this than would have seen it Saturday night. It's weird to have to pause because, you know, Raw viewership is so far down, and now on Peacock, pay-per-views are seen by more. But getting to actually headline and not just be an opener or a mid-card match or third from the top, and to have the spotlight and that kind of breathing space where it, you know, was the last half hour of the show, essentially.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good – if it's a consolation prize, it's a pretty damn good one, Jeff.
Yeah, agreed. And it, right down to getting the Johnny Gargano run-in at the end, that is not – the sort of thing up until recently that you would even expect to take place in the final segment of the show.
Yeah.
You know, that is a mid-show happening even, you know, 3 months ago.
And now it was the closing moment of Raw. And so, yeah, all's well that ends well in that sense too. And just a good audible, I think. I'm sure they were scrambling and considered multiple options. And, you know, there is some downside to not giving it that championship day PLE vibe that they had. But this, like I said, if this is a consolation prize, it's a really good one.
For sure.
Let's pause and formally introduce the show and give out the phone number and email, and then shift to other topics and also let callers lead the way. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, October 2nd, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch, the weekly newsletter published currently dating back to the late 1980s. And also our website, pwtorch.com, with daily news updates, 10 and 20 years ago flashbacks that are real fun, house shows and TV reports from 10 and 20 years ago that we put up on a virtually daily basis now, live TV and pay-per-view and PLE coverage, special features and editorials, and more. Check that out. And also the host of the Wade Keller podcast and post shows. Tomorrow on the Wade Keller Pro Thing podcast, our blue logo show. Unlike this, our red logo show, where we do live post shows with live callers and then post them after the fact. We do traditional podcasts and interviews on the blue feed. And tomorrow, Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net joins me. We will be recording just before the Minnesota Twins play their first playoff game. Jason and I are excited for that. We're not playing the Yankees, so there's a chance that we won't get swept. Look it up if you don't know, if you want to see how sad our history is with all great seasons, great players, Hall of Famers, and then we just play the Yankees and they crush us. So hopefully Toronto won't do that to us. So Jason and I recording a little earlier than normal tomorrow, so get your email questions in sooner so we can settle in and enjoy that game late afternoon. The email address is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. You can send in questions for our show tomorrow, our flagship, on anything in pro wrestling. So get to it if you're listening to us, especially on Tuesday morning. But first things first, we're here to cover Raw. And the voice you hear is a new one here on the post show, Jeff Rush. He is a contributor to pwtorch.com, been an on-and-off contributor. Jeff, welcome to the co-host chair. How's it feel so far?
Great. Thank you so much for having me, Wade. Really excited to do this tonight.
Yeah, so tell people a little bit about your background. You're writing a column now called Rocket Straps. Talk about that. I really like the concept and how you're executing it so far. It's unlike anything I've seen before in wrestling. And actually preface that just with a little bit of the background of what you've done before for the Torch to set the stage, because some people might go, oh, yeah, that guy.
Sure. Yeah, I've been a Torch contributor off and on since, I want to say, 2007-ish, work and life schedule depending. I hosted the Pro Wrestling podcast along with Caitlin Lavelle and Joe Aguinaldo for a couple of years just before the pandemic. and recently returned to the torch because I just can't quit. So I'm now, as you mentioned, I'm now writing the weekly Rocket Straps column up on the site, which in which I use various metrics, everything from the names used in the Raw and SmackDown email previews to who's given the top of the hour segments to who plays a lead and supporting role at the close of each show, amongst other things, to determine who the WWE is prioritizing with their main roster programming each week. You know, it's a blast to run the formulas and put the article together. I hope Torch readers have been enjoying it thus far.
Yeah, I have been. And I think it's one of those columns, too, that it's fun out of the gate, but it gains some context and layering over time, because there'll be like someone will be like in the top five seven out of 9 weeks, and then suddenly they won't be on it for 4 weeks. And you'll be like, oh, something's up. You know what I mean? Like, are they in the doghouse? You know, like, the establishment of patterns and almost statistics over time, I think, is going to be this added dimension as the column gains more weeks in production.
Absolutely. We're only 3 weeks into it now, and we've already seen that a couple times. We've seen the slow rise of Drew McIntyre up the chart, for example. And I think the first week or the test week I did it before I did an official week, Jimmy Uso was far and away the most prioritized wrestler on WWE programming that week. And so that was a real eye-opener when I first started looking over how I wanted to try to do this and what I wanted to pitch to you for it. And once I saw that, I thought, you know, this is really, really fascinating. And I think it's something we could, you know, dig into further and get a lot of cool information out of.
Absolutely. Well, let's give out the phone numbers and the email and then get to callers. We've got callers lined up. We've got some emails to get to and a lot more topics from the show, including Drew McIntyre, who, again, I'm intrigued by speaking to him. If you want to call into the show, if you're live streaming us right now, the number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad if you want to be on the show. You can also just call and listen if that's easier than streaming the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, so let's get to calls and begin with Ian in Tennessee. Ian, you are up first. No waiting this week. You're first in line. Welcome. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Wow, I was expecting to be a little closer in line because I called pretty late because I was freaking out about Gargano coming back. But, I thought Raw was a very solid show, a lot of good segments. One of the first things that came to mind was Judgment Day, opening the show with Rhea Ripley coming back. It was pretty interesting that she put some of the blame for Judgment Day on Damian Priest. Do you think this is starting possibly them taking Damian out of Judgment Day or him breaking away from Judgment Day?
They're keeping me guessing. And maybe it's because they're changing their mind. Like with Drew, we'll get into that later. I wonder if they're, you know, kind of changing their mind midstream or this is what they've had in mind the whole time. But it's working for me. And with Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley, and then you have the Nia Jax segment Nia Jax takes out Rhea Ripley, and it just led to a couple weeks of speculation. Oh, is Rhea Ripley going to turn babyface and maybe break up with Judgment Day? And I don't think we got any indications of that. It was more her just siding with Dom and Finn and JD McDonagh over Priest, who she's, you know, calling out for not being what was the role, the decider, something like that, the plan maker, and saying that she left, you know, Damian in charge of that. She goes, there's no leader. We each have our roles, which I'm glad she established because they're being consistent, even going back to Edge, that Judgment Day is all about equality, not hierarchy. But at the same time, she is chewing out Priest for, in her mind, in her 2 weeks of absence, things falling apart for Judgment Day and blaming him for it. So I'm assuming Priest is on his way to being a babyface and breaking off, and I think he'll be a good one, and I think he's grown a lot as a character this year, one of the most improved acts in WWE in the top third of the roster this year. But if Seth stays babyface and Drew maybe stays babyface, although we'll talk about that, and Cody's a babyface, and you got Jay, like, is there room for that? Jeff, what do you think of the Judgment Day and the story they told this week and kind of a broader look at the dynamic that they've developed?
Yeah, I enjoy the faction a great deal, and I didn't always feel that way when it was first Edge's faction, and then when they were slowly kind of finding their own way. It wasn't something that was necessarily doing it for me, but I think all the members have since formed the chemistry they have. They work great together, and I had no idea when it happened that Dominic would be such a key component to this working the way it does. And honestly, I was disappointed to see them go back to the inner turmoil well tonight. They had about, I think, 3 weeks or so where they were all getting along. And I like to see Judgment Day get along. Other than that, they've constantly been bickering one way or the other. And you're wondering when it's going to end, when Finn and Damian are going to go at it. Or, you know, we reach a point now where I'm like, why does JD even want to join the group? Like, if I'm him, yeah, maybe I'm reaching out to Bobby Lashley or even the OC or something. Like, sometimes Judgment Day just feels like a hot mess with all the arguing. But they always manage to find a way to get it back on track by the end of the show, too. So I thought it was interesting that Rhea Ripley came out, and she was putting the blame on Damian, to be sure. But she also read the Riot Act to Dominic for a minute there.
Yeah.
And so I don't know what happened in the scene missing, but when we got to them backstage a little later, you know, she was playing with his hair again, and everything seemed fine between the two of them.
There was that moment, too, where backstage, and by the way, I like the set when they're hanging out. It's like, you know, people in their mid-20s hanging out in an apartment, you know, just, you know, with the different friends who kind of get to know each other well, and they're just all hanging out. It's just those types of people, the vibe that they set up backstage, I think, is effective for that group. And it's distinct from the Bloodline, where it's all about, you know, limousines and caviar and, well, I don't know. You know, it looks more high-end club, and this feels more like incense and whatever.
Would play more into the lack of a hierarchy as well.
Yes, totally, yeah. And so, then, you know, just, yeah, like you said, Dom and Rhea behind Priest, this Priest is just venting, they're just in character. You know, it's fun when there's stuff going on behind this, in the background, that's relevant to everything else going on. But when McDonough made his case about how, hey, we might have them where we want them, speaking of Kevin and Cody and Sammy and Jay, and they're not always on the same page, and Priest was very hostile towards McDonough, but getting to Ian's question, McDonough said, you know, divide, not conquer, and Priest like, well, I got to think about this, but all right, not bad. It might be the other way. This might kind of mess with us, and there's an ebb and flow to the dynamic, but Priest on this show actually seemed to warm up a little bit to McDonough offering an idea and being okay with it, thinking it was pretty good. So to me, that almost felt like a little bit of a softening of Priest, just sort of blind rage hostility against JD being accepted in the group. Did that strike you, Jeff?
Yeah, he's almost been unreasonable in his disdain for JD to this point. And I think what we have to believe there is that he sees the same thing that we all potentially see in JD, which is a snake in the grass, which is somebody maybe did something shifty with that briefcase, you know, that maybe Damian's not quite thinking about that specifically, but we as viewers have been given that to chew on. But tonight was a little different, and I think maybe it had to do with being browbeaten by Rhea the way he was at the start of the show. You know, maybe he didn't want to make any more waves and was just willing to go along for the night. And, you know, we didn't have Finn here to argue with, which, yeah, you know, they've taken a break on that, but more times than not, they're doing that. So it almost felt like JD was slipping into the Finn role for an hour tonight.
I don't know if it counts as a timeless reference or a dated reference, but JD McDonough comes across as Eddie Haskell from Leave It to Beaver, the neighbor kid who's super nice to the parents and the parents love him, but when the parents aren't in the room, he's a terrible influence on the kid, Beaver. And so, you know, JD just comes across like he's just a little too – his friendliness seems saccharine. It just feels like, I don't know about this guy. But there's plausible deniability, and yes, Priest is so hostile towards him, it almost creates that sense as a viewer, like, I don't know, maybe Priest sees something that I think is there, but maybe he should give him a chance, too, because JD does seem like he's genuinely trying to help, and I think they played that well over time.
And JD has grown on me as a performer, too, I just want to say. When he first got inserted into this, it seemed like, okay, they're putting in, you know, this guy because he's friends with Finn. Is it a good fit? Is it not a good fit? And he's been great. You know, I enjoy – when he was off for a week, a couple of weeks ago, I was bummed out about that. So I've been enjoying having him back on the last 2 weeks.
I'm with you. He's what one thing I like about him, because pro wrestling is so full of people yelling and screaming and their eyes bulging out and thinking that, you know, just turning the volume up. You know, and I'm critical of MJF for this. Like, I think MJF is so talented. I never want to hear him yell again and overmodulate the microphone, and I don't think he has to go to the tawdry places he goes and the meta stuff. Like, to me, dial it back because he's so talented with the subtleties and the charisma. JD is that kind of walking example. I'm sure JD could yell and bulge out his eyes, but he's telling a better story by making us study him to pick up on the subtleties of where his mind is at and what game he's playing and if he's the snake in the grass. And not everybody can pull that off, but when you can, and then you put that in a wrestling show, to me it's refreshing and stands out more than being one of the people who's yelling.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it has to do with the dynamic that's created by all the different characters in the Judgment Day as well. I think they create that environment that opens the door for someone like JD to come in and just fit.
Absolutely. Yep. And there are times where yelling makes sense, like Priest being frustrated with things. Like, it's not like it can't work sometimes. JD is a snake in the grass who's like, I'm calm, and why are you guys freaking out and arguing? It's like, we know you're plotting. We know you're plotting something. Get off your high horse.
The worst kind of snake.
Exactly, yeah. All right, Ian, back to you. Any response to that or anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, you know, when they made the Judgment Day, I think it was early last year, I kind of looked at it as like an evolution group back in early 2000s, you know, where Priest and Ripley were kind of just under the water, basically. You know, they didn't know what to do with him, and Edge was like the leader, but with Finn, you know, it makes them all seem really big stars. And I don't think, and you guys might disagree with this, I don't think Damian really needs Judgment Day anymore. I think he's good enough on his own. Do you guys agree with that?
Not that I'm in a rush for him to break off, but like I said, I think he's one of the most improved WWE characters over the last in 2023. And he went from a guy, and I remember Todd Martin on The Fix saying, you know, some people, when they're not successful main event stars in the indie scene, but they have a WWE look, they still don't end up turning into top guys in WWE, because there was something missing that kept them from being a successful centerpiece act outside of WWE. And that just ends up holding them back. And I think that was pre-story for a long time. But, you know, the shows don't give up on people if there is something there. And there's always something there with him, but there's always something missing. And it was hard to put your finger on what it was, but that missing thing, whatever it was, isn't missing anymore. I'm not quite sure what it is. But he doesn't talk in such an affected way with a deep voice, and it's sort of this, you know, just like, I don't know, robot-like deep voice. And there's a little bit more humanity, a little more range to what he does. But also, it's the chemistry, and you don't always see it coming, but there is the chemistry that Judgment Day have, where you kind of do want to delay breaking them up again, kind of like what they've done with MJF and Adam Cole, where the feud got extended because, you know, well, and it was selling t-shirts and getting crowd chants. But in this case, it's producing really good television because of the intriguing dynamic between everybody. Jeff, your thoughts on Priest over the years and the year he's having, and will he be ready when they decide to pull the trigger on him being a singles act?
He is another wrestler who has really grown on me, another member of Judgment Day, or, you know, associate of Judgment Day, who has really grown on me over the past year. I think his turning point from being just a villainous member of this dastardly group to becoming someone we can see these potential shades of gray in and an eventual breakaway from Judgment Day in, I feel like that turning point came during one of the times they might have been thinking about turning him. He had that promo against Seth, and he had a match against Seth, and he was very clear in wanting Finn to stay out of it. It was right before him and Finn started having problems, but it seemed out of character for him in that moment to suddenly be the guy who wanted to do it on his own and didn't want to have any help. And they've moved away from that back to a more heelish Damian Priest since then, but he is managed to hold on to a piece of that that I feel he created then. And I think that's what we all see now. And I do think his time is coming where he will break away from the group. Unfortunately, I don't see that briefcase being cashed in successfully. I feel as though that's probably the thing that will eventually break him away from Judgment Day when it doesn't happen the way he would like it to happen, whether it's because of JD's meddling or whatever it might be. But I think he can certainly stand on his own as a babyface now, or, you know, 6 months from now, hopefully. Hopefully they wait a while on this yet. And I think if that does happen, they also need to look at what they're doing with Judgment Day then, because they're great. I love what they have going there. But once you lose Priest, you can't just plug in JD and call it good. I think it would be helpful to have another mountain of a wrestler be part of that group. Otherwise, they will be defined down a little bit. I don't think they'll be seen as a top-tier heel faction.
Yeah, I, and that might be one of the. I mean, they might have a nice story arc anyway that they're working on. But JD doesn't feel like somebody who can replace Priest with Judgment Day staying at the level that they're at. And maybe it'll just be time. Maybe Balor and JD become a tag team, and Rhea Ripley turns babyface and breaks up with Dom, and Dom does something on his own or latches on to somebody else. And you know, maybe it's one of those factions that doesn't have to last a long time. But if they want it to be a formidable faction at the level it's at now, they probably do need to add somebody else to the mix. Ian, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, Judgment Day seems like the kind of faction that could last for a very long time. You know, I don't know how Dom would do singles run. I think he needs Rhea for right now. You know, Finn, Finn has actually needed this group for a very long time. You know, he kind of got stale for a very long time, and I've been really enjoying Judgment Day. I could see them going without Dom and bringing in probably, you know, maybe replacing him with a Drew McIntyre, which I know is what Wade's been wanting, or maybe filling a Priest role with a Bronson Reed, maybe give Bronson a good group. You know, I don't know where else Judgment Day would go with that. But my next question is, you know, Gargano coming back was not, I wouldn't necessarily say a surprise. When they kind of made the match for tonight, I was like, okay, that means Gargano's going to come back. Did you guys see Gargano coming back now, or did you see him waiting for maybe Royal Rumble? What did you guys think of his return?
He wasn't on my mind this week, but when he was, I didn't really have a prediction other than they had foreshadowed it. So I thought, okay, either it's going to be soon or they changed their mind or shifted gears. But I it wasn't on my mind tonight, and was one of the reasons I smiled when as soon as Imperium attacked Champ afterwards, I'm like, okay, all right. Actually, the first thing that crossed my mind is this going to be an angle for Drew, where Cole is like, we need Drew out here to help Champ, and then Drew actually walks out and then says, nah, and decides not to. Like, I kind of thought they were going to do that, and then Gargano's going to play, and I'm like, oh, of course, and then I just smiled like, perfect. Jeff, how about you?
I had forgotten about the potential for Johnny Gargano to return while I was watching this tonight. Obviously, when Ciampa first came back and started cutting his promos, talking about doing it himself, that was a heavy implication that this would eventually come. And I don't know if I missed anything since then, but Michael Cole tonight said that Ciampa had been looking for him for weeks, and that wasn't something I had been privy to.
No, I don't recall that either. I'm trying to think if I forgot something. Ian, do you recall that?
I think I know. Yeah, so I follow Ciampa on Instagram, and he does like these little Instagram videos of putting up a lost sign for Gargano saying, lost, please help find.
Okay.
If you find
okay.
him, call Ciampa, yeah.
So they were acknowledging something outside of the show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Ooh.
But it was.
I don't want homework. I don't want to have to spend more time on social media to follow wrestling.
It was the sort of thing, though, when he came out, when he did the run-in, I love when they get me like that, you know, and I was like, oh, perfect, you got me. I was not expecting that one tonight. And, in fact, watching that match, I knew Ciampa wasn't going to win. I don't want to, you know, sound smart, but I think it was pretty obvious that, you know, Gunther's reign is going to carry further into the future. So I'm watching that match, and it was a really fun match to watch. But the whole time I'm thinking, what is next for Ciampa? where does he go from here? And I was even half convincing myself maybe he's the one who replaces Giovanni in Imperium, and how would that work? You know, maybe he's, you know, Gunther's earned his respect or something like that. It seemed far-fetched, but I was entertaining it as I was watching the match. But once Gargano came out, it all came together.
Yep. Ian, anything else for us?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about it, watching it, I was like, there's no way Ciampa wins. I was planning out, like, Gunther, you know, possibly doing a unification match with Seth as, like, a alternative. But my final point is, when Nia Jax came back a few weeks ago, I'm not ashamed to admit, I rolled my eyes because I was like, they don't need her. And quite frankly, her return has kind of been a little lackluster. Do you see her feuding with Rhea? Where do you see them going with Nia Jax?
I don't know what they're doing, but, well, I shouldn't say, because I mean, I mentioned this, I think, on The Fix with Todd, the VIP show, that I'd heard that, like, it was that Hunter is in favor of her. It wasn't a Vince move. It's not like this was forced on Paula Beck. But, you know, not getting too spoilery, but it's not, he didn't bring her back to be the centerpiece. He brought her back as a conduit to help get somebody else over by pushing her hard and then having a moment where someone goes over on her. And that's kind of what you'd use her for anyway, even without any, like, inside knowledge passed along, because I was just kind of inquiring about that to somebody. But I think if you're going to have Nia Jax, and I know she's a controversial figure for all kinds of reasons, on camera and off, but if you're going to use her, this is how you use her. You know, have her plow through people, brutalize people, be a bully, be on an island unto herself. She's attacking babyfaces and heels indiscriminately. And then don't set her up as being the dominant centerpiece. Set her up so that when someone beats her, it feels like a major moment that fans are happy with. And I don't know what the end point of this story arc is, but they're doing a good job with it so far. What do you think, Jeff?
I enjoy having her back, and I know that's not a popular opinion, but I've always liked her look, and I think the history she has with various key pieces that are surrounding her now opens her up for a lot of interesting storytelling. And she has done some fun stuff in the past. I know that she has her history of causing some injuries, and that's bothered a vocal majority online these days. But I think there is a way to make her work. I don't know what it is, and I will say this is one of those instances where the recent uptick in the quality of writing of the show has really given me confidence, knowing that something interesting will come of this. It's not just she's going to go out there, squash a couple of wrestlers, and then she's gone, or, you know, she's killed off, or however they do it. I don't know what it is, though. She has a potential feud with Rhea Ripley. I don't know how that would work. I think she's headed towards more showdowns with Shayna Baszler, and it occurred to me briefly last week that the purpose of having her back might be to create kind of a new star out of Zoe Stark, and that didn't work out the way I thought it was going to. So I'm really not sure, but I'm interested in watching and seeing where it goes.
Ian, anything you want to follow up on there?
Yeah, there's always that controversy that Nia, you know, hurts people in the ring. You know, people say, you know, wrestling's not ballet, but, you know, I kind of had like this weird thought of them doing a Judgment Day bloodline feud and having Nia join the bloodline since she's related to the Usos, but that kind of got pushed away pretty quickly. But my final question for you guys is the Cody Rhodes, and I don't know if they're calling him main event Jey Uso or if he's just Jey Uso, it's confusing, but the tag title match just kind of seems thrown together like a last minute get Cody and Jey on the card. Where do you see that match going? Do you see Kevin and Sammy possibly accidentally costing them the match? Where do you see that going?
Jeff, I'll throw you first.
I was wondering about that as they announced the match. It seemed like the natural progression for that would be eventually, if they were to go so far as to give them a title run, would be to have them work a program with Kevin and Sammy, which could be really interesting and really fun. At the same time, I don't see it. I prefer Jey as a solo star right now. I think it's a big part of why he was brought to Raw and what he's there to do is to establish himself as maybe a main event player, but at the very least, a top singles player of some sort. And so lumping him into a tag team again, not that it would be, you know, they wouldn't be wearing the matching tights and everything, but if they're the tag champs, he's a tag team guy, at least for the time being. And it's not something I'd prefer out of my weekly intake of Jey Uso right now. Mm-hmm. And with Cody, I thought it was interesting. He had his quick interview about his upcoming match, and that was it. The way they're using him these days feels very calculated. We'll get a lot of him one week, barely any the following week. And it's like they're very conscious of bringing out the burning out the audience on him, you know. And
yeah, I there's a self-awareness, and the word self-awareness hasn't always been used with Cody, I'll say. but I think he has some help in WWE keeping him from being his own worst enemy. Him coming out and just getting right to the point, and it was good. I mean, I like that. If he doesn't have anything to talk, enough to talk about, don't just put him out there to fill time. I also thought it was interesting that Drew made fun of Cody going, so what do you want to talk about? Mm. And then, you know, like it, it might be good for, it's like a potentially cool thing he should do forever, but it's also potentially going to undo his popularity. Like, and I think the risk might not be worth taking the chance that they're giving up on something that will have a reward by having him continue to do that. It's sort of a folksy, casual thing that, you know, people can be into, but it also could cause a backlash. But I sure hope Drew is authorized to say that, because that, you know, that could undercut something that that Cody's really enjoying. But that was like an interesting moment for me on the show, that Drew basically expressed what even people who like Cody, many of them think about that, which is he's leaning a little too hard into it. It's a little too cute for me.
Yeah, I agree. I loved everything about Drew McIntyre tonight. I've been enjoying him a lot the last few weeks. And yeah, I've got a lot to say about him. I don't know if we're transitioning into the Drew McIntyre portion of things just yet, but
not yet.
Yeah, he was really enjoyable tonight.
And I'm not trying to say, like, oh, stay tuned for our discussion. We just have other callers on hold, and I don't want to. I figure we'll dedicate time to it, either when a caller brings it up or when we get through our calls. Ian, appreciate it. Good topics. I will say this. I think before, because I don't want to not answer your question too, the thing that strikes me is someone is going to SmackDown, and we don't know who. And they were going to do it, and then they came up with some other idea for whatever reason. And now they're delaying decision or announcement. And I don't know when it's going to happen, but I assume one of those four, Jay, Cody, Sammy, and Kevin, are going to be sent to SmackDown, but they want to tell a story with them first. Well, it's not going to be Jay. That'd be crazy, of course. We're going to trade Jay for Jay. But of the remaining three, one of them is probably going to be the one who gets sent. Otherwise, it's a very equal trade, by the way. If they go, we got to send SmackDown equal compensation, let's send him Jay. Very equal.
You know, if he's been on the show long enough, he becomes a part of the fabric of Raw, and then sure, it's like losing a guy on Raw. So
that's actually really funny.
Yeah, that's true.
So I don't know what they're doing, but that could just be a determining factor, and it could just, you know, solve the issue itself. If it's going to be Cody, then, you know, there's no sense in Cody and Jay. But if they have more of a story they want to tell, then they can do it. Or they can be on separate brands and champs, because champs are on both shows, and they will be on both shows until they lose the tag titles too. So they can actually do that. Anyway, Ian, great topics.
Yeah, thank you guys for taking my call, and I hope you guys have a great night.
Yeah, you too.
Yeah, thanks. You too.
All right, our number 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. That'll flag you on our switchboard. We've got William in San Diego up now, and then we've got Brad in Florida and Jay in Michigan also. William, welcome to the show. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Hey, guys. Thank you for taking the call.
Yeah, for sure.
I guess I'd like to talk about how they handled the, you know, Becky's absence. I thought it would be almost a bit of a you know, a blessing in disguise for Tegan Nox, giving her maybe an extra week to maybe, you know, get a victory like she did tonight, and maybe develop a little bit more of a character, give her a chance to have a little more time on screen before a big match like that. What do you think about what they did with Tegan, and I guess what they're setting up with her and Natalya?
Yeah, I like that too. It wasn't like a top five item on the show tonight to talk about, but Natalya sort of feels J.D. McDonough-like, don't trust her. She's up to something. Jeff, what do you think?
I did not think I would find myself saying that after this week's show, prior to the show, but I do really like what they're doing with Natalya. She's suddenly supportive of Tegan. It doesn't feel authentic in any way, and Tegan can tell as well. But at the same time, Natty feels kind of desperate, but she's playing it without a stitch of irony. I think it's intriguing. It's like so much of what they're doing with the show these days. They've got something going with her right now, and I did not think a couple of weeks ago that was really possible.
Yeah, I don't know where it's going. I don't think it's going to be a big thing. I mean, they could Tegan gets a shot and then loses, and then she actually has a genuine tag team with Natalya for a few months. I mean, I wouldn't rule that out.
Maybe Natalya brings her over to the dark side. You know, that's...
Yes. Yeah, eventually. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like, they you know, Tegan loses and Natalya puts her arm around her and whispers something to her, and Tegan's like, no. And I can't, you know, and you're like, what did she say that Tegan isn't comfortable with? And then they have another match and Tegan ends up falling short or is late for the save. And Natalya then in the third match they have maybe offers her a chance to tempt her with cheating a little bit. A little bit of like the Adam Cole, I keep referencing Adam Cole and MJF for different reasons, but like that's what, you know, MJF was sort of initially doing with Cole, like, no, come on, cheat, it's okay, we'll win and fans will forgive us or, you know, whatever. And then eventually, yeah, Tegan goes to the dark side. They could tell a you know, 2-month story arc with that.
Right, and I think it's just, again, it's just such a great time to be a fan when we have these sorts of things to dig into that hasn't always been the case. It's barely ever been the case. And right down to like a minor storyline, we could sit here and talk about Natalya's motives. It's really cool.
It is, yeah. All right, cool. William, back to you.
Yeah, I'm also kind of low-key interested in it a little bit. I guess I want to move on to the Seth Rollins segment. What do you guys think about where they're going with that match? Because I feel like they've done a really good job with Shinsuke in the past few weeks with this feud and this heel turn. Does it hurt him in any way not, you know, being able to walk out with the championship? Is this kind of a must-win situation with him? And, just your overall thoughts on what they did tonight. And I guess the inclusion of Michael Cole, I thought he was pretty good on the out there with the interview.
Yeah, I don't think he likes Seth very much, does he?
You don't think Cole likes Seth?
It's just, the puppet remark. And then how quickly did Michael Cole run back to the announce table once Shinsuke got in the ring?
Oh, well. I think that's just Cole understanding he doesn't want to have more than 2 weeks. He doesn't want to be off television because he got...
No, I just wasn't expecting to hear his voice back on commentary so quickly.
That was really fast. Yes, that struck me too. Wow, that was fast. Cole has been he's been really good lately. And people always are like, am I allowed to say this? And I feel like people are going to, you know, it's like endorsing in any way Nia Jax. Like, oh, people are going to be out to get me. But Cole's been so good on commentary, and he's so much better than he used to be too. Like, people aren't like paying attention, or they're just sort of baking in their thoughts on him. It's time to kind of hit reset and listen to him through a fresh lens. Because can you listen through a lens? I don't know. Look at him through a fresh lens, because he's just really good. Like, I mean, he's like so much better than Kevin Kelly right now, and so many people would scoff at that, but they're not watching, or they're not open-minded about it when they are watching. Although Kevin Kelly's in last place in our PWTorch.com poll on your favorite AW announcer out of like 8 people. So I'm certainly not alone in being underwhelmed by him. But anyway, I didn't mean to pick on – well, he deserves it, but I didn't mean to pick on him. Cole's really good here. I had mixed feelings, but mostly good, about this Seth segment. I love the idea that Nakamura, from a mind game standpoint, is like, I know what you're going to say, Seth. So I pre-record videos. Because you're still predictable. Like, that's sort of baked in. Like, that's why you can air a high production video with captions with Nakamura, because he knows he's pulling strings. And that's what Cole's saying. You know, Seth, you become a puppet. Nakamura is controlling you, and you don't even realize it. He's dictating every one of your moves. He's got you right where he wants you. He's got you rattled. He's got your head in in a different space than it should be. He knows what you're going to do before you even know you're going to do it. So I think that was really well done. And having Nakamura show up on the screen and go, you know, basically, I know what you're saying, and here's my rebuttal. It pushed the – it was sort of like the criticism at Todd Martin last night on the VIP post Wrestle Dream Roundtable. It's like, it's ridiculous that, you know, for a lot of reasons that they had this Edge video, this Adam Copeland video all ready to go. If he wasn't actually going to, you know, if there wasn't a reason for him to come out, it would have been silly to have that all queued up. But that's a whole other issue. But sometimes when there's a video, you're like, wait, how do they know to produce this for this impromptu moment? So I was like, I was thinking, this is really good, though, because Nakamura was like, I knew what you're going to say. However, having him pre-record counting towards 10 and stopping at 9 when Seth stood up, or stopping at 6 before that when Seth stood up, or whatever, 6, it's like, that got a little too cute for me. And then I'm like, wait a second. How would he know how long it would take Seth to stand up and get it right? So I could have done without that, and I like that he started counting on his own, you know, at the end.
Interject real quick?
Yeah, William, go. Yeah.
I think, if I remember correctly, I think they stopped the video, like Production Truck or whoever in Storyline or in Kayfabe is controlling the video. I remember correctly, I feel like they stopped the count, and, you know, they kind of, I don't know, if he gave the truck guy a $50 bill or whatever to, like, stop it.
I will check on that, because if they covered their base on that, then full credit to them. And then I just missed that they actually just stopped it and he was counting enough. Even so, it's a little orchestrated, you know, to do that. But I don't want to get hung up on that, because I think largely that doesn't matter enough to override what I thought was really, really good about this feud. And I think Nakamura, obviously everybody in the building was warning Seth, and Seth had to play dumb. So, you know, he had that aspect of it too, when Nakamura charged out and hit him from behind. But those relatively small things aside, and I say relative to the things that are really being done well, is Nakamura's body language and the promos, and the fact that his personality is blossoming because he doesn't have to struggle with the English and the inflection. And then in the ring, just when he was just strutting and prancing around the ring in self-congratulatory mode after attacking Seth, I just thought body language-wise it was really good. They've gotten way more out of this and kept me interested way longer than I thought was possible when this first came up. And, you know, it's why you can't get too worked up when somebody is not being utilized a lot, because WWE's just sort of has this confidence that if we decide to push someone and they have talent, we'll get them over. It's not always true. Sometimes you can define someone down too much, but Shinsuke is talented enough that when they decided to reheat him up, they gave him a context where you would believe why he'd be more successful and more motivated than he had been. And so it's been working for me really well. Jeff, how about you?
I'm not sure how it would work or if it could work, but I almost would like this feud better if it wasn't over the title. It would help me buy in more to Nakamura as a legitimate challenger. And I love everything he's been doing. I love the promos. I for one reason or another, I have not been able to really fully buy into this program. And it's the one thing on a show that I've really been enjoying otherwise that hasn't been fully clicking with me, to be totally honest. And I don't know if it's because I don't see Nakamura coming out of this with the title. I don't love the whole injury aspect, or, you know, when Seth moves on from this, are we supposed to forget about the whole, his back is so bad, his career could end any day thing. And then he just moves on to another program and he's fine.
Yeah.
There's a few things happening with this specific program that I'm not enjoying as much as I am the rest of the show. That said, I thought tonight was done really well, except for I had the same kind of issue you did, Wade, with the count. It kind of took me out of it a little bit. When you train us to wear our thinking hats all the time, things like that will jump out a little bit. But it's possible we missed that. So I don't know.
Yeah. Cool. We'll get back to you.
Yeah, that's a good point about the back, and something that I also been kind of thinking about, you know, what happens after this feud? Are they just going to forget about it? It's almost like what they used to do with his knee when he got injured and he came back. You know, it was kind of inconsistent sometimes. Whenever it fit the story or whatever, they would bring it up again, and he would, like, injure it in the middle of the match to, like, have him overcome or whatever. and sometimes it wouldn't be an issue until I guess they've just faced out and it's not really an issue anymore at this point.
Yeah.
Another topic I wanted to talk about was I guess you guys already kind of touched on it at the beginning, but the opening segment with Rhea coming back and all four women in there seems like they're going into a fatal four-way match at some point. I guess that's kind of what they're setting up. And, you know, for the longest time, I thought they were setting a babyface Rhea versus heel Nia, but it seems like maybe this is their way of circumventing that and kind of muddying the waters a little bit, I guess, where, you know, it's because you already have two babyfaces in there with Shayna and Raquel. I think you already, you know, mentioned that you're not really sure where they're going with Rhea's character in terms of her alignment. But did that sway your opinion one way or the other? And I guess on top of that, if you add, you know, that seeming threat she made to Dominic about, you know, if you don't bring the title, don't even bother coming back. Seems like they're setting up a potential split between the two of them. And if we're honest about it, you know, Dominic is probably the only thing that still keeps Rhea from getting universally cheered, you know. Him being next to her is, like, by proxy, she gets boos. But if he wasn't there, she'd just be getting universally cheered.
Totally true. It's possible what you know, the sort of almost ultimatum-esque statement by Ripley about Dom is more just to get people to watch tomorrow night and just make it seem like the stakes are really high. But it also very well could be Dom's going to come up short and it's going to lead to, you know, discontent. And it very well could be JD's got to step in and then kind of take manipulate or finesse things, and that they want that to be a plot point in the group. I am curious at when, because Ripley was, you know, didn't she tell the crowd to, like, shut up or something at some point? I mean, she's not going in with a cheer. She's not like, oh, it's fun, you're cheering me. She's acting like that's not even happening. So they're not on the verge of her turning. But when that happens, I am curious where Dom ends up. But man, Ripley's in such, she's just got a level of confidence to her right now, and an alpha quality that so many wrestlers never find. And they're leaning on her. Like, they almost have to say, like, she's not the leader because she's so obviously the leader. You know, like, they almost are going, they are going out of their way to explain, yes, obviously she's the leader, but she's not. Don't think of her as a leader. Don't believe what you see, because she's got these leadership qualities with these, you know, other, I mean, Dom's not an alpha male, but you know, Priest and Balor certainly have been, and JD's got his own leadership qualities. Jeff, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty funny at the start where they were talking about how there are no leaders in the Judgment Day. And then she essentially says, well, you know, we all have our roles, and my role was to be the leader, and I left you being the leader while I was gone. You know, she didn't use those words exactly, but that's kind of what she was saying. I think Rhea and Dom have a mutual...
It was a fine line between leader and decision maker. Like, she was trying to say that there was a difference between those two things.
Right. I do think that she and Dom have a mutually beneficial relationship right now. I think, like our caller just said, being with Dom keeps her being a heel more than she probably would be otherwise. And then I think with Dom, he's grown a lot since he's been in the Judgment Day, but he's not quite ready to fly on his own yet. And I think part of the reason people hate him as much as they do, part of the reason anyway, is because he's with Rhea Ripley. I think that's infuriating for fans.
The way he said, shine the belt up for me, or keep the belt shine up, or whatever that line was, his facial expression was just so good. And I mean, it just makes me want to buy a ticket and go boo him. Like, I mean, it's working. That's what people are buying tickets to boo Dom. And in the way that he said that, he just, again, you know, oh, he said, keep it clean for me. Like, even the word was just perfect. Keep it clean. Yeah.
I was thinking about that earlier today. I went to the AEW show that was here in New York last week, and I was there with friends of mine who we haven't gone to a wrestling show together in a while, and I was reminded of the type of fan who was my friend who I went to the show with, who was clear to cheer for the faces and boo for the heels, and I get that, and I know why people do that. I can't quite find that groove myself. I still am of the opinion that I should cheer for who I feel like cheering for and boo who I think really deserves the boos. Not as any sort of way to hijack a show or anything like that, but simply that's how I enjoy myself as a fan. I'm going to cheer you because I'm really into what you're doing, or I'm going to boo you because I'm not. Oftentimes that falls in line with heels and faces. This is all a way of saying that I would most definitely buy a ticket to a show right now just so I can go and boo Dominic. I'm absolutely on board with that.
Yeah. All right, Tom, we'll get back to you.
Well, I'm sad to say that I was actually at the NXT show this weekend in Bakersfield, and there were a lot of people cheering there for Don, and myself included. So I don't know if that's the Southern California, and Don, him being from San Diego and that kind of connection between him and I or whatever. But,
you guys are doing it all wrong.
I know. But, yeah, I think that's all I had. So I'll just let you get to all the callers. Congrats to your twins, Wade. I don't really have a horse in this race anymore with the Padres not making it. So I guess I'll cheer for you.
Well, I appreciate it. I appreciate it. Thanks, William. Always good hearing from you.
Thank you.
Call again. All right, 347-215-8558. We'll go to Brad from Florida. Brad, thanks for calling. Good to hear from you again. What's in your mind about Raw tonight?
Hey, guys. Wade, again, you know, the twins, are you you feeling good about their chances?
You know, I haven't had time to follow them as closely as I normally would when they're as good as they are. I was watching a game this weekend, and I saw the stat that they have the second best record in the major leagues the second half of the season. And I knew that they had, you know, I followed them earlier in the year when people were like, oh, they're supposed to, they have a chance to be good, but man, they just keep dropping down to 500 or whatever, and they're going to underachieve, or maybe we overrated them. And so I followed them closer then. And then I just sort of have been hearing, and my mom follows them, you know, a lot closer than I do. And it's like, they've been winning, and they got some rookies who are doing well. And I was like, man, I need to take time to learn a little more about the new players. And, you know, Max Kepler's having a comeback year, and he's like the one name that I really have been more invested in over the years. So it's weird, but I feel like I need to do more of a crash course on them to get a sense, and I'm not going to have time before tomorrow mid-afternoon to do that. So I'm the wrong person to ask in terms of their chances,
yeah,
other than the, you know, the people who follow them closer than me are excited about them. But I will just say this town is, and I am too, kind of, I'll talk to Jason about it tomorrow during the show, but sort of just our guard is up to get too excited because we've been excited about Twins teams before, and then they just get ousted. And, I mean, they haven't won a playoff game in like 77 years, and that's not true because they won two World Series, but in 87, 91. But it's been a long time since they won a playoff game. It's crazy. I think it's the longest streak of any team in all of pro sports in terms of consecutive playoff losses. Someone can check that fact for me, but I think that's true. I hope they have a nice run, and then I don't know how I'll manage to fit it into my schedule, but I will, I'll find a way.
Yeah.
But no spoilers.
If
I'm watching,
if I were
doing
you,
a post show and the Twins are playing in the evening, don't call up and start talking about them to me.
No,
cause I'll record it.
I would suggest, I think you should buy a ticket to one of those three playoff games because you have all three at home.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're going to be waving the white towels. It's going to be really good probably, honestly. But regardless.
Well, my son is starring in A Midsummer's Night, in a Shakespeare play at his high school this week. And so it's going to be a busy week already in addition to that. But
Lysander,
thank you. Yes,
that was my role when I started in that
really
play as well. That's amazing.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. He's
my favorite
he's,
high school memory. That was great.
He is so excited. He's a freshman and he got that role. He just is having a blast and been spending so much time getting ready for it. They had a photographer come out this weekend and shoot some photos of them all in full costumes and he showed me some photos and it just looks like it's going to be great. So between that and the twins, I don't know. It's going to be a busy week, people.
A big week, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, good luck to your son. I hope he does great. And listen, I don't want you guys to hate me, but I kind of have just something I wanted to say from the heart about Raw tonight. I don't mean hate me, but just, you know, I don't want to be a Debbie Downer, but, you know, this episode of Raw to me, and maybe I'm a guy who just likes sports entertainment more than I like wrestling in a certain way, like, it just seems like it's the same song and dance over and over and over again. Someone's looking for a fight, and someone wants a fight, and they want to fight. Like, I miss the funny. I miss the creative, the interesting relationships. And those are the things that get me more excited about the matches. And I'm not saying every single thing on a show like Raw on a Monday night is going to have that. But it just seems like more than ever the last three or four Raws especially, like, it's just, Ciampa's looking for a fight, and Natalya's looking for a fight, and Tegan Knox wants a fight, and Cody wants a fight, and Kevin Owens wants a fight. It's just, it's the same thing over and over and over again to me. And I miss the Alpha Academy game shows with RK-Bro, and I miss, you know, the funny creative segments that are a little different, and, you know, maybe
I've got a wrestling company for you, Brad. Well, I got a wrestling company for you. It's AEW. They have picked up that torch, because if you want to hear about punch him in the wiener and skits on a boat with Big Show, Paul White floating in the bay, and it just, and I mean, it's just they're the ones doing that now.
The
so.
Two companies really have kind of traded out a little bit there, haven't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels like
kangaroo kicks. Yeah.
It feels like WWE, and, you know, I don't know, maybe they're mailing it in because of Monday Night Football. Maybe they are, this is just a slow time of year that they're just trying to coast through until they get to the Royal Rumble and the big things. Maybe it's the UFC merger thing where they wanted to mimic more fighting more than anything. But do you guys see a major difference in the shows, or am I just seeing something that is, you know, I don't know. I just feel like the shows haven't been fun. Again, I feel like just the theme is everyone wants a fight, and they're getting it. And the storylines and the creativity is almost non-existent. I mean, I don't see a lot of it. Am I wrong in that critique or assessment?
Brad, I didn't hate you at the beginning of the call, but I'm getting there. I just disagree with the premise. I think Raw has been more layered, more nuanced, more sophisticated, more fun to analyze, more fun to watch. The 3 hours breezes by. The post-show discussions aren't me complaining. It's not callers complaining, except for you. It's people calling up and going, I don't know what's going on with Drew. What's going on with Rhea Ripley? What's Nakamura? They've turned him into somebody I care about. Chad Gable's having this kind of TV only feud with Gunther that people got really into. And then now you've got Tommaso Ciampa, who they tell the story arc with, and then it leads to DIY reuniting. You've got this interpersonal play going on with Imperium. You've got the interpersonal dynamic that's intriguing with the Judgment Day. You've got Kevin Owens and Sammy, who feel more like real people, and that Sammy is more forgiving of Jay, and Kevin Owens isn't there yet and doesn't want that. I could go on. I mean, we'll talk about Drew eventually here too. I just respond to your question because I fundamentally disagree with the premise. I think Raw is as good as it's been in like decades right now.
Wow.
And so you and I are just looking at something different. I don't think they're coasting. I think they're writing some of the best, most layered, nuanced pro wrestling booking on a TV show that I've seen in a long time.
And I agree with you, Wade, in that regard. Obviously we've both been kind of having a mutual gush party here for the most part today.
Yeah.
But I also, I will say, Brad, that I understand what you're saying. If I can say as much, I think maybe you're getting a little hung up on the end note prior to the development, right before they go out for each match. You said, they say that about Kevin Owens is looking for a fight, and Kevin Owens does say that, you know, he said, okay, enough talking, I want to go out there and hit somebody. But that comes after several segments of Kevin and Sammy and Cody all deliberating over the intentions of Jay and all the things that tie into Jay and his involvement with the Judgment Day and everything else. There's a lot going on there that eventually, right before they head to the ring, boils down to, and now let's fight. And I think that's okay. I mean, that, ultimately, that's supposed to be what we're here for. We're here to watch people fight in the ring. And so they address it naturally, I think, before that happens. But there's so much going on building up to those let's fight moments that I think when you say it's simply just let's fight, it really doesn't give them enough credit for all the work that's gone into building so many characters and so many feuds right now.
Brad, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for your perspective. And listen, there are some. I'm not trying to say there's no redeeming qualities to Raw. Like, I watch all 3 hours, I don't miss a thing. You know what I mean? But what I'm saying is, like, yeah, there's certain things to me that didn't make sense. I know you touched upon it a little bit, but Cody and Jay, for instance, like, Pierce comes out. Okay, this is the tag team, and they're facing Judgment Day. Now, to me, I wanted to hear the story of, Do they want to be tag team partners? Do they want to be together? Do they want to even work together? Is this just something Adam Pearce comes out and just declares and that's it? And they did kind of address it a little bit, like, hey, I didn't envision myself teaming with Jay. You know, I didn't – whatever Cody had said when he came out. You know, but still, to me, like, I feel like they could have done a little bit of a better job with, you know, maybe something happens where Cody and Jay are in the ring together and saying, like, you know, we should team up against these guys. Like, we should, you know, let's take them on. You and me, a handshake moment, or whatever, you know, whatever it is. Like, I feel like it was just very, like, Cody came out to save him. Okay, this is what the match is. Boom. And even Damian Priest said, what? Like, you know what I mean? Like, and I know he was, the premise was that he was pissed about having to defend it for no reason or whatever, but and I'm sure it's going to lead to other things with Kevin and Sammy being pissed, whatever that is, but still it didn't feel it felt like they could have done more with it. And it's like things like that that make me say, well, you know, can we have a little bit more than just let's get to the fight and this is what the fight is going to be? You know what I mean?
Well, I think it's like Wade Barrett said a couple of weeks back, anybody not punching Jey Uso in the face right now has to be considered a friend. And I loved that line, but I joke there, but I also am somewhat serious in that the story they're telling with Jay is he doesn't have very many friends. He has this one guy who went to bat for him, got him, helped get him out of the bad situation he was in. And he, you know, he feels indebted to him. And Cody hasn't given the full explanation yet, but he has said a few things. And he mentioned, you know, I think seeing some of himself in Jay as far as seeing a person who needs a second chance. They've done, in my opinion, enough to explain why the two of them would be drawn together, if for no other reason than for their mutual disdain for Judgment Day. I thought it was a natural flow for Adam Pearce to come out and say, okay, these two are going to fight you now. So I didn't have any kind of problem with that.
And credit to, you know, the Raw booking team, Paula Beck at the helm, that, you know, that was addressed. It's like, why are Cody and Jay teaming? Cody's, you know, Cody is the guy who goes, I think Jay deserves another chance, so I'm going to, you know, use my leverage or my pull to get him to Raw. I see something in him, and I don't want to hold against him. And I wasn't around for a lot of the bad stuff he did, too. It's kind of part of the Cody approach. And so Pierce is like, all right, you know, you guys keep beating, you know, going after him. And so and he comes off for the save, so I'm going to book this match. But they had the wherewithal, they were cognizant of the need to address that. And so, you know, Jackie Redmond interviewed, you know, asked Cody, you know, what do you think? And he's like, I never anticipated I'd be teaming with him, but it's the Judgment Day who backed themselves into this fight. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they're playing into that. And I don't know what ultimately it will lead to right now, but that's totally fine. I mean, it's not always bad if you know where something's going, because it's fun to watch it play out. And it might just be so logical. You, of course, are going to see it coming. Like, Gunther beating Ciampa tonight, but other times you don't know what's going to happen. But they covered it. They interviewed Jay, they interviewed Cody, and it's an unlikely partnership, but it's not like they're enemies by any means, but it's more their common enemies that is leading to them, being teamed together, and it was Adam Pearce making an impulsive decision. So, by the way, sidebar, I don't want Adam Pearce to lean into this thing of where he always goes, it's official, and that's like a thing, and there's going to be T-shirts and people chanting it's official. Like, they're starting to turn that into a thing, and the thing that's been really nice about Adam Pearce is he's just the disheveled, stressed-out middle management guy not trying to get over as anything but that. So it seemed like they're really leaning into that. And he had a little twinkle in his eye saying it like three times tonight. So I just want there to be less of I don't want that to be a thing. I guess it's my little sidebar here, my parenthetical.
I will marvel once every 3 months or so at the fact that he is still there and still in that role and has not turned evil. Is not getting involved in any way that he doesn't need to be involved in. It's an incredible amount of discipline that WWE has shown with him over the past, I mean, has it been 2 years now?
Seven years.
Wow.
No, it hasn't been seven. Anyway, yeah, Brad, back to you.
Yeah, very last thing is, on the Jade Cargill stuff that they did Friday and today, do you think, now listen, I know she's a big deal, and I know they're very excited about her, but it does seem like, you know, they are... I don't want to say making a mountain out of a molehill. That's not what I'm trying to say, but almost like they're making it bigger than it is at this point. You know, they're almost making it like they, you know, signed, you know, the Rock to return for, you know, for 2 years or something. Like, I don't know, like they're making now, do you think that is a shot across the bow to AEW or whatever? Like, do you think it's a way of saying, like, look, we got her, and we're going to make her into a bigger star than you ever could, and look at the way we're showing her and presenting her and pushing her before she's even done one thing, and, oh, this is a notice to anyone else that might want to come over that we want, like, this is what we can do for you, too? Or do you think it's that they're genuinely that excited about her? And I'll listen to the rest, and I'll let you guys get to Jay, I believe, or whoever else, but... Thank you for taking my call and hearing me out. And I'm just curious on your thoughts on that.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Yeah, great question, Brad. I think it's more of the latter. I think they just believe they have a star on their hands. And they can't do this with everybody. Like, if you did it, like, Johnny Gargano's on the main roster, and he's the biggest free agent signing ever. Or, I mean, with more time, I could come up with a better example. Like LA Knight, if they had treated him, who would come from... like Impact Wrestling and skip NXT and show up, and then they like give them this treatment. You'd be like, Sami Callihan, like if they acted that way, like, oh, Sami's contract coming up. So we got, oh, it's a biggest rate. People be like, what are they doing? This is weird. Jade is like, she exudes crossover celebrity major star. She has that look she has from the second you saw her in AEW. And WWE knows it, so it feels appropriate tone-wise to then be a promoter. And I think sometimes people get confused that the promoter's job is not to be honest with you. It's not to abide by historical accuracy. It's not to be tempered and let the fans decide. For a promoter's job is to amplify and get the most out of someone that you can, oftentimes by giving fans a story to believe in, even if it's not technically true. And Jade wants it to be true, and I think it's brilliant. They're going, she's already looks like a star, but she says she needs to put in the work to have the marquee matches to prove that she deserves the acclaim and the hope. They're treating her like a number one overall draft pick quarterback in the NFL. She's great. She's got great traits. All the pieces are in place for her to be a star, but she still needs to put in the work at practice, study the tapes, you know, and do all the stuff behind the scenes and on glamorous stuff. So I think they're hitting the tone right. Now, all that said, Brad, I think there's a touch of, yeah, we want to, you know, but they're not, there's nobody else in AEW that, I mean, I guess if they sign MJF, they'll, in their own way, they'll treat that as a big deal, but it has to match the character. Like, this also fits the Jade Cargill character. Her character is going to be, she's a really big crossover star who the second you see her, you think, you know, the opposite of how the Authority talked about Daniel Bryan. She can be on our poster. She can be the face of our company. That's the story they're telling, and it works. If they sign MJF, they're going to introduce him in a different way because his character is different. He doesn't look like the traditional poster centerpiece attraction. But a lot of centerpiece attractions don't look the part initially. But when you do, hype them that way. And so I'm for it. Now, is there a risk of a backlash? Because fans are like, they're getting behind her. You know, like what Ciampa said about Gunther, it's really true about Jade. So, yeah, she's got to put in the work. But if fans reject her in some way, then she can go heel or 3 years from now talk about what a flame out she was. Jeff, what do you think?
Yeah, I also I feel like a lot of WWE fans have no idea who she is. You know, not everyone watches both companies. And
absolutely, yeah.
And
not everybody researches online things they don't understand either. Like, that's not like just, I think there's an overestimation of how many people do homework after they escape from work and family life and stress, and they watch a TV show for entertainment. And if they don't get something, the people listening to shows like this, Jeff, are like online, and you know, they've got wrestling Twitter and wrestling Reddit and all that, and podcasts, but there's a lot of people who make or break whether a show is having a really successful run. There's a lot of people who are just, they reserve 2 hours to watch something and then they move on to the next thing. And those people, I think, are who you're referring to, are going to be like, I don't know who this is, but apparently she's a big deal.
Right. There are clips from ESPN touting this signing,
yep,
that they're showing us. You know, it's not exactly the same thing as an old school build through vignettes. And these aren't obviously vignettes, but they are kind of creating a major star here just by the way they're bringing her in. And I think that's,
yep,
that's going to serve them very well.
I agree. All right. Jay dropped off. I want to get to our Drew discussion, and then we'll wrap up with email. We're running long here. But Drew McIntyre, I thought, he's going heel. Can't be bothered to save people. Got a chip on his shoulders. Got an attitude. He's going to set up a feud with Cody or maybe Jay or Seth. And it just seemed obvious, and it was good. It's like, hey, Drew needed to get his edge back. What he was doing was fun. I wasn't as down on it as some people, but I didn't think it was his path to become a centerpiece act like he was during the Thunderdome era and the Performance Center era. And yet now, what he's saying, Jeff, it's like, I like this guy. It's a little Stone Cold, a little John Moxley, a little trying to think who a good comparison is. Just like, I'm tired of being the guy who always runs out and saves people when people don't run out and save me. The guy who always does and says the right thing and answers the call when you need an autograph show or you need a media interview, and, you know, being that guy. Because, and he's not saying it, but Cody came in and took that spot from him in a way, with the fans and just almost literally behind the scenes. But this week was a pivot to something different, which could be a baby face. And I'm not saying I'm willing to bet in 2 months he's a baby face right now, but they're taking a path to wherever he ends up that a week or two ago I wasn't expecting. This was an interesting twist. Jeff, what do you think?
They definitely turned the dial up a bit this week. And I think he was spinning his wheels for a long time. I have no idea where they were taking him with Matt Riddle. If we were looking at a heel turn there, or if they were just hoping to get some more of that RK-Bro magic out of Riddle. But it wasn't quite clicking. I was open to seeing where it would go, but I'm okay with it being done. He's so perfect in this role he's in now. And I'm 100% convinced he'll be a full-on heel sooner than later. But I got to say, I kind of wouldn't mind him remaining at this stage. He plays it so well. And
yes.
You know, the old adage, the best heels are the ones who believe they're the baby faces. And that's exactly what he's doing now. And I think we even got to see him. He got kind of creative with it a little bit. He's very comfortable in this role. And even this week where he's playing this kind of tweener thing, he says he doesn't answer to the fans. I don't know if you caught that. He says he answers to his fans, which, you know, there is a distinct difference there. And he had a lot of them on his side when he first started kind of cutting that sort of promo. And then by the end, he did that real snide, you know, now that I said I'm sorry, I'm forgiven, yay. And you could see it killed off a lot of the cheers that were building for him. So he's learning how to do it. You know, he has the audience in the palm of his hand.
Yeah.
and it's really fascinating to watch. Do you think
they're setting him up to be? I sort of am repulsed by the tweener role, but and people ever advocating for it, because I just think it you have to be in the right company for that to work with the right booking approach. You can't drop it into whatever AEW and especially WWE do and expect it to make any sense without just completely undercutting both their babyface and heel opponents. But are they building something in where he's going to be a heel, but a heel in a way where there are pockets of fans cheering for him? And again, that's almost the definition of a tweener if you do it intentionally, and then whatever babyface you're wrestling gets undercut by it. And we've seen, you know, babyfaces over the years just damaged, if not destroyed, by being against a popular heel. And then they just look foolish because the fans are cheering the heel, and they were once popular, now they're not, and it's embarrassing. And so I just don't know that they can go that way. But what he did tonight, I think, is going to lead to fans cheering him if they're not careful.
I actually have that exact phrase written down in my notes. If they're not careful, they're going to build him into a mega baby face with this very human, relatable role that they have him in. But I like the way they're using The Miz in this program too. It's almost like he's like the devil on Drew's shoulder. And the way he's feeding him those lines about, you know, the way he's going to react after things go the way they're going to go. And I'm watching it, and Drew is beating him down, and I'm looking at this, and it has this feeling like Drew is beating down something inside of himself. Like, is that too deep for this? Like,
I would have thought so 2 years ago or a year ago, but I feel like people are putting this level of thought into it, and it's not being rejected by Vince McMahon. Or there's room for wrestlers who care enough to think about their characters to have this kind of nuance and have then the team support what they're doing. You know, I mean, there are wrestlers on Raw who look out for themselves and are not just showing up going, what have you got for me? You know, Seth is that way, and Cody's that way, Becky's that way. There's people who are just like, all right, you know, who fight. And some people like Sammy do it to an annoying degree, and people are like, go away, settle down. But others are just like, let's get in the trenches and let's figure this out and let's make this work. And they get genuinely frustrated, but turn that into motivation to get better. And I think Drew is on that list also. And we're seeing that maybe show up, where I wouldn't be shocked if he's not showing up going, I want to do this with my character right now. And the writing team and LeBeck are like, yeah, you sold me on it.
Yeah. Yeah. I could definitely see that it has that kind of nuance behind it. And I've always thought, I'm one of the people who's thought the usage of the sword is totally silly. He comes out with a sword. What are you going to do with a sword? So, of course, I popped huge in my living room tonight. I startled my wife when he pulled out the sword. I thought that was amazing. And then to see the way he used it as a distraction so he could actually cheat in another heelish way instead.
Because I was like, no, things are going so well, and now you pulled the sword out. No one believes you're going to actually behead him. And then It was like, I know the ref's is going to take this away. It's going to take him a minute to get rid of it. So then I can go yank this turnbuckle off. It was, and use, and again, it was a babyface move because Miz is the one who loosened it. He was just doing what Miz was planning to do.
Right.
So but to use the sword as a distraction rather than like, I'm really going to wind up and swing and behead Miz on live television, which is just stupid. He didn't do that. He found the way to use it in a way that made sense.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what got the pop out of me is I had, again, it comes back to this trusting in the current writing that's happening. I knew when he pulled it out that it was going to be for something good and not for something stupid.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Anything else on Drew?
I love Drew. That's all I got to say right now. I can't wait to see what they do with him next week.
I'm curious if he ends up being the one sent to SmackDown. If he lands there and ends up being the heel that allows Roman to turn babyface, or if he actually is this babyface with an edge who now feels fresh against Roman, or if he doesn't face Roman right away and, you know, he ends up, you know, feuding with whoever else on SmackDown would be, you know, a big enough name for him to be a baby face against, whether it's in the bloodline or not.
Yeah, I feel for right now, there's still so much meat on the bone with him as far as potential feuds with Cody, potential feud with Sammy or KO even, of course, Jay. Like, he has a lot to do still. It's not like they're out of ideas for him. And I think that might be part of what happened with this delay with the trade is I assume it was probably Cody, and then they realized they have maybe this thing with Drew heating up or other things that Cody can be doing. So it kind of pushed everything off for a little bit.
Yeah. All right, let's go to JB in Detroit. He goes, hi, team. I think WWE has a problem with the tag division that's been building for a while now. Since the origin of the Usos' reign, it feels as if the titles haven't meant all that much and have just been props in faction warfare that already had built-in storylines. And in the meantime, no real credible tag teams have been built. KO and Sammy are single guys who were paired together. The Judgment Day is much the same. Even if we go back to the Usos, Jay's proven to be a singles guy. I'm hoping that maybe the Street Profits are in the process of being built and perhaps pretty deadly. I also wrote this before Gargano saved Ciampa to presumably reunite the DIY, but they still have to tell that story, right? They can't live off of the NXT lore. Well, that is true. They can't. It is there, and it is helpful, but you got to build your own storyline within the canon of Raw, and unlike AEW, WWE gets that, and they tend to do that. They don't disregard, if it's helpful, the backstory in history, but they understand you've got to build that canon. You've got to build it within the canon of the show itself, and I expect that to happen. So I get what JB's saying, but I don't see it as a problem either. I think it's more of a feature than a flaw, but I think in the end you do just sort of want the tag belts to end up being on a tag team rather than two people in a faction or two people you see as singles guys. KO and Sammy are, to me, they're so interlinked. They are a tag team, even if they're often singles guys. So they're kind of in almost a third category where it's sort of they're 50-50. They're a team, but they're singles. But I get thinking that about, two members of the Judgment Day. To me, it's like the tag division is actually kind of intriguing right now. You had DIY. You've got, Imperium were just jobbing out, and now you can tell they're like, no, they're good. And we don't want Gunther to be part of a faction with jobbers. So we're going to tell a story that he's disgusted that they're not better, and then he's going to make them better. And now we've told you a story. We've taken you on a journey where now you are disregarding their earlier losses because you've seen them transform thanks to the story that you saw before your very eyes over the course of months. So between the Street Profits, Pretty Deadly, DIY, and the Viking Raiders are just going to be, role players in the division, which is fine. New Day don't belong in the top. The tag division is not strong to me if the stale, obnoxious, abrasive New Day are one of the top four or five teams. But it doesn't mean cut them, but hopefully they can eventually get what the Street Profits are getting, which is something fresh. So it just doesn't feel stale. But to me, with the Usos, KO and Sammy, the Judgment Day, the possibly Jimmy and Solo, there's just a lot of moving. There's a lot of just pieces to play with right now that I think they're actually in pretty good shape. But I get that JD's kind of ready for it to move to its own, the tag division and the tag titles to have its own thing and not be a subplot in a faction. And I get where he's coming from, but it's not bothering me right now. So Jeff, how about you?
I agree with that. I think once in a while, every few years, going all the way back to, Kane and The Undertaker being the tag champs, or, obviously far beyond that too, you reach these periods where you need to kind of reestablish the belts and make them a bigger deal again. And I think we're in the middle of that right now. And I think maybe if it stays here for a while, that's not the worst thing. I'd prefer to have the tag titles be a coveted prize that's being featured in main events of Raw, being featured in main events of WrestleMania, with quality players involved, as opposed to, going back to having tag teams who are treated no more than mid-card at best and trading off the belts between them. If that's what we're getting out of true tag teams, I would much rather have it the way it is right now.
I agree. number two from JP. Is a Gunther Ciampa match as the main event going to really hold an audience against Monday Night Football? I love Ciampa as much as the next guy, and I like the match, but it's clear the main roster audience hasn't bought in or shown much interest in all at the way that he was introduced or how he's been presented. I do like that they're making Gunther a Raw main event workhorse, and he hasn't been on the last few PLEs, So, yeah, I mean, I just don't think we can judge this under normal circumstances because they had, you know, a Becky match and a Priest match planned, and they had to call audibles. And that said, I mean, I don't think WWE is phoning it in, but I also don't think they're sitting here going, oh, my God, Monday Night Football's on. What can we do to try to draw people away from the New York Giants playing? Like, I just think they're like, we're going to do our thing. We're making more TV rights money than we've ever made. We're drawing better average crowds than we have in a long time. There's room for both. There's room for Monday Night Football to be a juggernaut. We're going to take a hit. We know it. Everybody gets it. The networks get it. And we're just going to do our thing. We're going to tell our stories, and we're not going to stress about it. And I think that's the right approach to take. And frankly, it's about the only approach to take because the other option is hotshotting. And I don't see any merit in that. So what they're doing is, and it's what they did with Edge on SmackDown. You know, it's like, oh, he's leaving. Well, we like him. We're self-confident enough not to have to bury him or feel like we got to, you know, yeah, bury him on the way out or minimize his value. But we got an extra main event out of it. We got an extra big segment out of it. That is a weekly stress point for that writing team in Levesque and McMahon. You know, like, how do we come up with 104 main events a year for our two primetime shows? They got away with one tonight. They pulled it from the pay-per-view and they made it work. So again, it's not that it has to be the biggest driver because Ciampa isn't, but they told a story that made it feel like it belonged in the Raw main event spot. And part of what, and JB got into this, Jeff, it's part of what makes Gunther seem like a star is that you put him in a featured match on Raw because that last spot on Raw, not just anybody gets to be in it. So when Gunther's defending the IC title and you're building up the title and you're building up the challenger and you're doing a segment to build it up, it actually kind of has like the synergy of making Gunther seem like a bigger deal because the IC title has not always been this prestigious. And right now you've said it's a big enough deal to main event Raw, whether it's through the audience that, you know, putting Seth Nakamura on instead would have drawn isn't really the point because they can't do that. Jeff, right.
Yeah, no, I agree. They had to dig their way out of a bit of a hole at the start of the night tonight, and they threw together a great show, and they finished it off with an excellent main event. And I think the end of that main event may have even created, bigger stars out of DIY than we'd otherwise have. I mean,
yeah,
you can't take back now the fact that they reformed following the main event of Raw, because that's the way they got back together, and that's a big deal.
Three out of three from JB here is, what is the main event of Fastlane? I don't see it being Seth against Knock, as I'm not sure that enough has been done to differentiate it from the prior title meeting. I'm assuming it's going to be the tag match, either Cena and Knight against the Bloodline or Cody and Jay versus as JB is, but certainly Cody and Jay against Judgment Day and Cena and LA Knight against the Bloodline works for a variety of reasons. You know, tag titles are seeming relevant in this context, and it's John Cena and it's the Bloodline. So what do you think?
Yeah, I lost the audio for a portion of your reading, but I think I got the point of that one. And I think, how do you not headline the pay-per-view with John Cena teaming with LA Knight at this point? I think that's the obvious main event. But I do think either tag match could really hold their own in that role.
Jeff, can you hear me?
I got you in for a second again then. Yeah, my audio is dropping out. I'm not sure why that is.
I think it's my my mesh system here. I have to take an afternoon out and upgrade it, I think, because it's been flashing. Now it looks like the stronger signal's back. Jeff, the last thing I heard you say was you heard enough of the question, even though some of my audio dropped off, and then that's when your audio dropped off. So go ahead and just repeat the answer.
Sure. I was just saying that you have John Cena teaming with LA Knight, and I think that's a really big deal. I don't see how the pay-per-view closes out any other way. If it did, I think the other tag match with Cody and Jay would make a lot of sense too. I don't think there's an issue as far as finding something deserving of the main event slot. They definitely have some options on their hands in those two matches.
But not Cody and Jay for the tag titles?
Oh, that's what I was saying. Damian. Either Cody and Jay versus Judgment Day or Cena and LA Knight.
Oh, sorry. So I'll augment my answer. So, but not Seth and Nakamura for the World Heavyweight title?
I don't.
Last man stand.
Yeah, it's a big deal, and they've given it, you know, the stipulation they have. But this is maybe one of those areas where the work I'm doing on Rocket Straps right now is showing that it's their world title and it's not the biggest deal on the show. It gets the top of the hour segment each week, but it hasn't had the same that feel of high priority to it that anything involving Cody has had, that anything involving Jay has had right now. Those things seem to take precedent over this world title feud. And so, yeah, I could see that tag match going on, you know, after Seth and Nakamura for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Plenty of candidates on this lineup. Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, I'm trying to think of a deciding factor that would lead to something happen. Yeah, I'm not sure. It's a good question from JD. Any of those three matches that he brought up, I think could actually work.
I mean, if we have Cena and LA Knight going on last against the Bloodline, is it possible we get an appearance by Roman Reigns at the end? That could be
possibly, but do you want to not have him on the card and not advertise him and spend one of those? Like they make such a big deal out of him appearing, and they want to get so much out of it when it happens. But I mean, you know, you want to establish PLEs. Anything can happen, and sometimes unadvertised things happen.
Yeah.
All right, we'll close with Azan from St. Louis, his email. In your honest opinion, what's the state of the WWE Women's Tag Team Champions at the moment? WWE should drop the belts and say, have become a joke rather than an important championship. What do you mean they become a joke? Were they ever important? Yeah. They're just where they've always been. I'm pre-answering the question. And they have removed three actual women's tag teams from TV. I'd like to see The Way, Kayden Carter and Katana Chance, and Brian Don back. Yeah, Jeff, what do you think of the women's tag division?
I don't know if it says anything that I had to think for a minute about who the champions were. And as much as I've been enjoying the show and the writing, and I've been enjoying Chelsea Green and Piper Niven, it's a unique pairing. But that is not something that's been treated as a priority in any way, to the point that I had to think for a minute about who even held the belt. So if they're going somewhere with the pairing of Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark, that could be super interesting. But then I don't know who you've got lined up to face them. Yeah, I would like to see something. They're putting so much detail and so much nuance into so many aspects of the show right now. I would love to see the women's division get a little more of that, especially in the way of the tag division.
All right, number two, what are your thoughts on Trick Williams and how do you think he'll do in the future? I can see WWE investing in him more than Carmelo Hayes. Yeah, interesting. You know, the synergy with Raw and NXT continues, and, you know, they know, I mean, it's pretty clear they get more viewers when Raw specifically pushes what's going on NXT and when it involves somebody from Raw. And yeah, they put Trick Williams on TV. My critique of his promo is the ha-ha-ha after he got done saying what he planned to say is, you know, kind of that indie-rific thing that, you know. Yeah,
exactly what I had written down in my notes here. Indie-rific. I felt the same way. He has the look. He could definitely be a main roster star, but that wasn't the most impressive debut promo.
No, but he does. I mean, he's not just Jade Cargill, but like I'm 6'4", 250 pounds of muscle. Like he looks like somebody who will be a star. And that is part of the cosmetic, charismatic, you know, presentation of what makes you a star in WWE, not exclusively, but it, you know, because other people don't look that way and they get pushed and they get popular, and that there's a diversity of appearance from Otis to Gunther to, I mean, Otis Kaiser have the opposite bodies of all humans on Earth. They are the opposites physique-wise. WWE has diversity on their roster, but that said, Trick Williams does have you know, he's gonna make, WWE's gonna look at him and go, all right, this is a main roster attraction if he checks the other boxes. But yeah, the promo tonight wasn't great. But you know, not everybody who visits from NXT and gets a moment on Raw is necessarily going to be a regular or get a big push. You know, it is just part of the synergy of trying to co-promote the two shows right now. So I don't know, read too much into it, but yeah. I think Trick will be given opportunities to be a star, and I think there's you know, enough indications that he's got a chance right now.
And I can't even pretend to relate to what it must have felt like to be him and be in that spot and cut that promo. You know, of course, it's going to come off maybe a little clunky the first time, but I do think he'll be fine.
And then finally, with Eric out, Ivar seems to be in a push position. How would you use him as a solo act? I haven't heard how long Eric's out, but I wouldn't use Ivar as a permanent solo act. I just think what they're doing with him is fine. I mean, he's one of those people who can have a good enough match, and you put him on a filler segment on Raw, and you're fine. I'm always happy to be proven, I would say proven wrong, but surprised, I guess is a way to put it, that somebody just breaks out of being a mid-card tag team wrestler and turns into a star. But I'm not predicting that for him. I just think, you know, Eric will be back, and they'll go back to doing what they were doing until, you know, 2 to 6 years from now when they're cut.
Yeah, I haven't minded him as a good point. I haven't minded him as a singles wrestler. He's like a differently proportioned John Nord almost.
Yeah.
But did you catch the part where Michael Cole referred to a previous Kofi and Ivar match as 5 stars?
Yes, I did. That was a great troll job.
I know.
It was a good match. But yeah, Cole is aware of the culture and knows how to troll. And it's a sign of confidence in his work and confidence in the WWE product, confidence in how many more tickets they're selling than AEW, and a little bit of a, you know, abuse of that term. I'm talking about it, but I still don't quite know what to make of it. But I took it as Cole's just having a little fun.
Yeah, I could see that. To kind of follow up on what you had said earlier, I do think Cole has been amazing since he presumably has removed the earpiece that had Vince McMahon in it for so long. You know, he transformed a bit once that happened. So
I think he's been improving even before that, to put that on the record. But yes, if Vince isn't in his ear every week, it's allowing Cole to not be filtering what he does through, am I going to get yelled at? Is this what Vince wants? And it's fun. I mean, it's fun seeing someone who's been around that long be this good. And it's also, you know, people who give it a chance are going to come around to see how good he is right now. Anyway.
I'm hoping if I praise his work enough, he'll never put a singlet on again, and he'll never go into a heel commentator role again.
I bet he does not, for all kinds of reasons. Cool. Anything else from Raw you want to bring up, Jeff, before we wrap up here?
No, you know, I kind of wanted to mention something about Ivar there, and we worked it in right at the end, so I'm pretty happy.
Our callers and emailers came through. No duplicate questions, and everybody, you know, big stuff, medium stuff, and small stuff. We got it all covered. Yeah, I don't have – when they called Bronson Reed the Burly Bruiser, I was like, oh, I hope they're dropping Big from his name. But then they went back to calling him Big.
Yeah, and he has a coat. He has like a jacket with it on the back. I don't know if they're going to sell those things, but he's wearing one, and it's got his name on it. So I think it's official, and it's there to stay.
The Big Bronson?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But the Burly Bruiser, Bronson Reed, I like the 3 Bs. I triple B. works better for me than Big. That's just lazy. Not since Mr. JL and Big Bill has there been a lazier nickname for someone.
No, but at least he has a nickname. He had nothing for so long. It's remarkable how much even giving him that kind of lazy nickname, in my opinion, helps somewhat.
Yeah, well, maybe. I have to think about that. Or as Damian Priest would say, you've got a point there. Was that his phrase? Got a point. What did he say to JD?
Oh, as he was coming over to JD's side, he's like,
yeah. You got a point there.
Like
yeah,
it's a pretty good.
Yeah,
point.
Yeah. All right, cool. Actually, he said, all right, not bad. I'll say,
okay.
All right. All right, Jeff, not bad.
Thanks, Wade.
Very good. Jeff, thank you so much. Been a blast talking Raw with you.
Thank you. This was awesome.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you. Thanks to our listeners. Thanks to our callers. Thanks to our emailers. And we will talk to you all tomorrow. Don't forget, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. If you've got a question, comment, or feedback for the flagship with Jason Powell tomorrow.